This is Issues 2024. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. Welcome to Issues 2024, sir.
Thank you, Steve, and happy 2024.
Yeah, it's been a while since we had you on this program, and I thought it might be well to start the new year talking about changes and the new year ahead at City Hall. We begin with the new mayor, Lily Wu, and two new city council members, Dalton Glasscock and J.V. Johnston. How does the city get new folks up to top speed on the when they come in there? What's the playbook?
Well, you know, we've got three people that are pretty enthusiastic about serving, and they spent a lot of time, as soon as the election was over, coming alongside us. We went through an orientation session with them, actually multiple meetings, right, where they met with each of the departments and learned a little more about their operations, asked some great questions. And then Mayor Wu and I have had several meetings during that transition period to talk about issues facing the city and issues that are important to her. And so they're hitting the ground running, extremely interested in having a good, solid background as they start.
We start the new year looking back, I guess, at a campaign finance ordinance. Well, actually, it was passed by the city council about January 2nd. And that what are the pending what are the pending limits, and who can donate to a local political campaign?
Well, as you know, based on what you just said, it's in a state of flux right now. It's there's a $500 limit on individual contributions, and PACs and corporations, limited liability corporations, and other types of organizations are also allowed to make contributions. A lot of that comes out of a Supreme Court decision a number of years ago that broadened the definition of donor or eligible donor. And the discussion right now is whether or not the allowance for corporations and limited liability corporations should be continued, or actually they were terminated on January 2nd by the previous council, and then this council's determining whether or not they should come back, and they should be allowed to make contributions.
What's the city's role in this? I mean, in campaign financing, is that come under a different jurisdiction, or who determines whether they're violating or not?
Well, first of all, if the council doesn't act, then we just follow the state guidelines. And the old ordinance pretty much did that, followed state guidelines in terms of who is eligible. And then council then makes a determination on any campaign finance limitations. And that's the $500 limitation that we have in place now. And again, this only pertains to municipal elections. If we were to get involved in the enforcement, if someone were to exceed a limit or receive a donation or contribution from a source that was illegal, then our law department would work on that. And I think the state campaign folks may also get involved. I'm not an expert in this, Steve, so I'm not aware of any illegal contributions in the past, so it's not something that I've had to spend any time on.
I guess that was my question. Is there really a problem here?
I think it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? A number of people commented at the council meeting yesterday, and folks were on both sides of the issue, and some feel that, frankly, if you allow contributions by corporations, that they will probably be less likely to give to PACs, and there'll be more information available to folks about donations or donors. I don't know what the right thing is, and frankly, that I wasn't elected to make that decision. Council's having a robust discussion about it, and I think it's good for the community to talk about expectations on campaign finance.
Well, there's a new downtown parking plan. How long has it been since we had a meter reader looking for scofflaws down there? I don't see the meter readers anymore.
We do have them. We have staff on the street. We suspended that operation during COVID and really for about a year after COVID. And then when parking started to pick up downtown, then that's when we brought back the parking attendants who monitor what's going on at the meters and in the parking lots. The meters are important because they, if we enforce them appropriately, then we get enough turnover in front of retail businesses, and we keep downtown workers from parking in the prime spots and making it difficult then to do business, you know, to run in and get your coffee, or, you know, we have jewelry stores downtown, and, you know, proximity of parking is important to them.
That was my next question. What impact will this have on downtown business and events? It sounds like if they're moving in and out of those spaces, that's better then, huh?
It is, and that's what you see in cities all around the country, is that they believe it's important for the retail community to go ahead and encourage turnover of those parking spaces. Especially if your business is dependent on quick in-and-out traffic, restaurants, coffee shops, those kinds of businesses.
And how's this paid for? How's the program paid for?
Well, in the perfect world, it's paid for by the parking users, right? So when you put money into the parking meter, or you put money, you give money to an attendant in a parking lot or garage, that money then comes back into our system budget, and we use that to pay for maintenance of our system, which, as you know, you could guess, we've had deferred maintenance in some of our garages and parking lots for a period of time. So the parking plan that we're talking about now and the new fees will help us maintain the parking infrastructure.
And while we're on the subject of downtown, I haven't heard much recently about Century 2 and big exhibit-type shows and performing arts. What's going on there with all of that?
We have a new council, and I would anticipate sometime this year we'll have some serious discussions about maybe the first phase of improvements along the riverfront, and that'll probably be focused on the convention center itself, Bob Brown, and what we can do to modernize that space, maybe expand it. It's, you know, there's two ways of doing this, Steve. One is to do a pay-as-you-go and basically put it into phases or pieces, or you could try to do the entire improvements, all the improvements that were called for, which is expansion of the convention center, reuse of the round building, and also reuse of the library, along with a creation of a park along the river, a bridge over to the West Bank. You could put all of that into a single project and then bring that to the community to vote on. But I don't know that the community is ready for that at this point, and so we're going to at least look at doing it in phases and bring that to the council and let them make a determination on next steps.
Aren't you familiar with what's going on in Jackson County, Missouri, with Arrowhead and Royal Stadium?
A little bit, yes. Good friend of mine is the county administrator in the county.
Who's the county administrator?
Troy Schulte.
Oh, I thought it was Frank White.
Frank White is the CEO or the county executive.
That would be
Troy
the,
works for him. Yeah,
that's the former Royal player, Frank White. That's what he's doing.
Yes, right.
Listen, what I can read is that for years, the Jackson County or people in Kansas City have been there's like a 1% tax to pay for this. Say, I guess it's a sales tax. I don't know, but. Is that, have you studied that? How much money would that generate in Wichita? I mean, could we build something, or we could build a palace here if we did something like that? And I know you're not favoring increasing taxes. I'm just.
Exactly. Well, I think what you have to do is listen to your constituents, listen to the people. And, you know, it's pretty obvious in the Kansas City area, they want to do everything possible to keep the Royals and to keep the Chiefs and keep them in Kansas City, Missouri. So that's, you know, the issue up there. Here, it's a matter of what the public really wants to see in terms of improvements. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of concerns about, you know, the basic condition of our infrastructure. And it's, you know, some people that I talk to say, before you ask me to approve additional tax money for riverfront improvements, I want to make sure that you're doing everything possible to enhance our streets, to keep us safe. Let's, you know, fill the police vacancies. Those are the things that I hear people talk about.
I'm going to talk about what's your opinion of the city's approach to those who are unhoused? I'm calling them that, or the homeless, but some people are calling them the unhoused. But we have these, the folks are, they're in the streets, they're everywhere. Is the city doing the right things in their approach to how to treat these folks?
Yeah, Steve, that's a great question. This is an issue that communities across the country are struggling with, large cities especially. When I go to meetings with other city managers of cities our size, usually the first thing we talk about is homelessness. I think we're on the verge of announcing a plan that would not only address this issue in a comprehensive manner, but would maybe make us a model for other cities in the country. We're looking at creating a single point of intake. It's called the multi-agency center. It's where all of the agencies that touch the homeless would have a presence. If someone comes off the street and wants help with either temporary housing, try to get into permanent housing, if they have issues dealing with mental health concerns or substance abuse, all of those issues could be addressed by the agencies that are represented at the center. Then we would also coordinate with those who offer shelter and make sure there's enough shelter beds. And then we'd look at making sure there's enough affordable transitional housing and caseworkers that can come alongside the homeless. I just heard a great report about a program similar to this in Finland. And an individual was talking about how he'd been on the street and that this transitional housing and more affordable housing, having a caseworker to help him, made all the difference in his life. In fact, he was sure that he would have been dead had it not been for an approach like this.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about this opportunity. This week, there'll be a discussion with a community homelessness task force about some options that we're exploring in terms of location and how the facilities would be laid out. And we're hoping to bring something to the council in early February because there's a deadline for one of the funding components for this project that is in February.
You're listening to Issues 2024 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. Do you get to network with other municipal officials? Sounds like you do. And what are they saying about the problems they face? You've just talked about homeless. What are some other problems that our cities are facing across the country?
Well, I think folks are concerned about finance, and not so much today. We're still benefiting from the federal assistance we had as part of the COVID relief coming from Washington. But everybody recognizes that we could see some tightening financial conditions in 2025, 2026, and beyond. And like we're doing here in Wichita, they're trying to position themselves to be right-sized and to be doing the right things, focusing on the priority services. And we were really fortunate here that the council agreed to put some money in reserve that will help us during this transitional period of 2 or 3 years. One of the worst parts about going through the recession, and 10 years ago or so, was that it was a roller coaster, right? And so council would prefer not to see significant cuts in services if at all possible. So we want to do some things that are more strategic going forward. So I hear that in other cities. The issue of employee retention exists at our level just as it does in the private sector. And then, wage pressure, I think it's starting to relieve some, but the last time we met, cities were trying to be creative to come up with attractive either wage or benefit packages in order to attract folks and fill their vacancies.
You know, the new water facility going up near the zoo is impressive. Every time I drive by it, I'm impressed anyway. When can we open the valves out there and get some water coming through?
Right now, our target's the end of this year or the very beginning of 2025. We have we have to finish construction, which should be done probably this summer, if I remember right. But then we have a long commissioning process. And one of the things that's the most difficult, Steve, is that you have to have a significant volume of water to go through the plant in order to test all the systems. Well, if our construction gets completed this summer, that's the time we have the least amount of water available to go through the plant for testing because we're sending so much water out to our customers. That's our highest demand period. So we may see a little bit of a delay in the commissioning process and the testing process. And that's why I say 24, early 25, before we'll have all the testing done and you'll be able to get water completely from that plant.
Earlier, you mentioned infrastructure. Is Public Works keeping up with infrastructure needs?
I think so. I think the legacy of the last few city councils has been their dedication of appropriate resources for infrastructure improvements. We now have long-range plans in place for each category of infrastructure. So there's a long-term street plan. There's one for water and sewer. There's one for our public buildings. Those are just some examples. And I think the council's working hard to make sure those are all adequately funded. And that will benefit not just you and I, but more importantly, our children and grandchildren, right? That's why I call it these legacy projects, because if we continue to fund them at the levels that we are now, hopefully future generations won't have to worry about crumbling infrastructure.
Yeah, it's not glamorous, not a bit, but
No, it isn't, but man, we hear about it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you have a boil order because you have a significant main that broke, or you have, people are dropping their tire in a pothole on a regular basis, those are the things that people, associate with bread and butter services that the cities provide.
Public safety, always a big concern for taxpayers. Do we have enough police officers and firefighters now?
Well, we're doing great on the firefighter side. Whether or not we need to add positions, that's something we'll be talking about over time. I will tell you, we just received the results of our citizen survey. Fire continues to be rated one of the top services, and I know the council's committed to making sure that we keep the level of service that we have now. Police, everybody's talked about that over the last 6 to 12 months in terms of the number of vacancies we have. What the council did with increase in salaries, I think, is going to help us with recruitment. I'm confident over the next probably year and a half that we'll be able to get either eliminate that high vacancy rate or at least address it significantly.
What about employment within city government? The people who are making it to City Hall work, is the help wanted sign out there?
It is. In our Public Works Department, there's a number of jobs available, especially in street maintenance. We're getting a good number of applicants, but we're still competing with others for those kinds of positions. One of the places that we struggled, going back to the discussion about the new water plant, is we have not been successful in filling all of our water plant positions. So we're starting an aggressive recruitment campaign. We're increasing the salaries for the employees that operate both the old plant, but more importantly, will operate the new plant so that we can get some qualified people in the facilities and that we can get them up and running.
Tell us a little bit more about federal grant money and its impact on the pandemic recovery.
Well, we received $70 million in pandemic assistance that has to be committed by the end of this year and all spent by the end of 26. Excuse me. And I'm not sure how we would have made it through the post-pandemic period had it not been for those funds. But we've also received really valuable assistance from federal agencies over the last few years. And I give the mayor and council a lot of credit. Annually, they go to Washington, D.C. to sit down with city staff and with staff from agencies, federal agencies, to explain what our issues are and to really kind of lobby for additional funding. And if EPA had not stepped in and provided us low-interest loans, we never would have been able to build the new water plant or make the substantial changes that we're going to make in our sewage treatment operation. And then we have another federal agency that has helped fund our ASR project, which is one of our water source projects. And again, without their assistance, we would be struggling in terms of being able to address water supply during droughts.
What's the city's role in the area of housing? I know we have housing codes, but we're talking about attracting thousands of new people to the town, but are there enough places for them to live?
Yeah, Steve, that's a really good question. And, market rate housing is probably going to take care of itself. Builders build as they believe they can sell, if that makes sense. But what I think the council's concerned about right now is affordable housing. And is there enough supply of housing, whether it's starter housing, whether it is apartments at affordable rates? Do we have the right supply that allows us to thrive, or our economy to thrive, right? And so I think you'll hear the council talk a lot about our role in stimulating affordable housing, what our role shouldn't be. We put aside $5 million from our federal assistance tied to the pandemic to help with affordable housing. And I think in the next few months, you'll hear some pretty robust discussions by the council in terms of the next steps.
I think we may have covered this topic. I just want to narrow it down if we can. What are the biggest challenges, two or three, that face the city of Wichita as we go into 2024? Challenges, opportunities, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, I don't know if it's a challenge. First of all, I want to celebrate the Biomed Center. And, you know, that's going to be constructed starting in 2024. The city has a role in terms of making sure there's sufficient parking and transit to help serve that project. But we're talking about 3,000 students ultimately that would be downtown, another few hundred in terms of professors or instructors. But more importantly, we're talking about development that will occur around that facility related to healthcare. And whether it's just it's doctor's offices or it's research activities, it's going to change not just the face of downtown, but it's going to really alter our economic development, our economic mix, right? And we'll always be reliant on aviation, but this is really exciting about diversification of our economy. And so over the next year, we want to make sure we're doing everything possible to help that project move forward. And so I won't say that's a challenge as much as it's a great opportunity for
us. Are we looking at on a smaller scale, obviously, and a different scale, but are we looking at something similar to a smaller Mayo Clinic, a Johns Hopkins, or something like that as far as what we're doing here?
You know, actually, that's not a bad model. It's probably more like Phoenix. If you're familiar with the way that the medical facilities or biomed facilities have developed in downtown Phoenix, there's a number of universities that have built facilities and then a number of small offices that have built up around Phoenix. They tell me Houston. I haven't seen it at Houston. I haven't seen their cluster, but it's the same kind of development. But when you talk about specialized medicine like they have at Mayo, I would anticipate you'll see a development of those kinds of services after the Biomed Center is established.
All right. So you're just about to celebrate 15 years as Wichita City Manager. I'm sure they're going to have a great big cake and a party for you. what has it been 15 years? That seems a long time for a city manager. Has it been fun?
I've enjoyed it. I tell you this every time we talk. This is a wonderful community. I feel like it truly is my home, and I've enjoyed the 15 years serving this community. I'm excited about the future. There seems to be a great enthusiasm about the next few years, and you know, I find that rejuvenating as well. So it's this is a great place to live and work.
Hey, listen, thanks for being with us again this time. And our guest is Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. We'll speak to you again in a few months, maybe. That's all for this edition of Issues 2024, and we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.